Wow, a new podcast. How about this? Welcome to Criterion Now. This is a new show, kind of a news show, not really a news show, more of a discussion. And this is episode one. I'm Aaron West here. This is part of Criterion Cast. And welcome to our flagship episode. On this, we're going to have a variety of guests. You'll recognize a number of them from Criterion Cast, from other podcasts, from social media. We'll have others, maybe some surprises, maybe some people from outside of our little sphere. And so we're going to talk about Criterion stuff. It'll be more reactions to what's going on in the world, some news, like I mentioned, but more about our takes, our opinions, our perspectives on, you know, how the media, physical, digital, et cetera, how that's all changing. So I'm excited for it. Are you guys?
Definitely.
Yeah, definitely. This is great.
Woohoo! Well, it's sort of a roundtable of sorts, and so this is the first episode, and I'm joined by four friends. I guess you could say a roundtable of film nerds, which is what we are.
Absolutely.
Talking about what we love. You probably recognize that voice, but I'm going to go around alphabetically and introduce everybody. And well, the first are kind of a pair, and it's just a nice coincidence that they're alphabetically paired as well. But Cole and Erica from the Magic Lantern podcast, hello, you two.
Hello.
Thanks for having us.
That you have an awesome show, which I shamefully have not heard enough of lately, but I've been a listener since the very beginning, and actually we kind of had started our shows at the same time. But do you want to just say a little bit about yourselves and your show?
Sure, go ahead.
We have, as you mentioned, the Magic Lantern podcast. It's all about retracing those cinematic memories, whether they be old or new, those films that have had a big impact on us, and talking about why we love them so much.
Nice summation. Yeah, good. All right, Mr. Mark, I think people know you.
Yeah, I think so. We've been partners in crime, Criterion Crime, for a while. But yeah, Mark Kearney, co-host with Aaron on Criterion Close-Up, joined the Criterion Cast episodes here and there, like the last wishlist episode that we talked about what we hope will be coming from Criterion at some point in the next year, the future, whenever. And overall, guilty as charged as a Criterion and film nerd.
Yes. And lastly but not leastly, Matt, what are you up to? You wear a lot of hats.
Yeah, all of them Criterion, I guess. I just recently took over the Criterion Considered Facebook group from Keith. Keith decided he wanted to watch more movies and do less Facebooking. So that's just a place for fans of Criterion to go and discuss the movies that are in the collection. Whether they like them or don't like them, and recommend movies for other people to check out that are in the collection. It's just it's a good place to really focus on that aspect of film nerddom, and that's a lot of fun. And then other than that, I just raise a couple of kids and watch a lot of movies, as many as I can.
Okay, where can you find it? Where can we find you raising kids? You do that on Twitter? Or?
Yeah. kidraising.com. That's probably a thing. I don't know.
Yeah, that's probably going to a porn site.
Doesn't it all?
I know. You don't make a mistake in that URL bar, people. So as we mentioned, we're going to be back to Criterion Considered. That was actually the Criterion conversation, and then it's been revamped, and you've kind of cleaned that mess up. So if you're socially media enabled, we'll go ahead and click on that link in the show notes, and I recommend that. And of course, also the completion. And I've been enjoying the Criterion Gyre quite a bit. It's a nice relief from all the seriousness sometimes.
For sure.
So, welcome everybody. Excited to have you all, and for this first episode. So, let me just give you guys an overview of what we're going to talk about today, and pretty much where the series is going to go. As I mentioned, we're going to talk about some news, but this isn't a news show. So, this week we'll maybe have a couple things, I do invite the guests to bring something of their own if they want. But this, since we're at a brand new year, we'll talk about the New Year's drawing that Criterion released, the wacky drawing. We'll also talk about, well, we're going to continue what was a holdover from Mark and I's mindset podcast, Criterion Close Up. We're going to do short takes, but these are going to be Criterion specific, or at least have some sort of connection to Criterion, Criterion-ish, I guess. And I think this week they're probably all Criterions, and each one of the guests will bring one of their own. And another thing that I'm kind of excited about is we're going to talk about Filmstruck. And I guess I should have asked you guys, do you have Filmstruck? That's kind of important.
Yes, we do.
We do.
Yeah.
You don't have to, actually. There's plenty there that as long as you know about movies, you're probably okay. But, you know, it's a new landscape for physical and digital media, and I think it's a big transition for Criterion. So if we're going to talk about now, Filmstruck is very much now, and I'm curious how that now will be a year or two from now, and I think we'll follow it as it evolves. And I don't think we'll watch all of Filmstruck. There's a lot of content there, at least not every week, maybe over time, like Matt. But there's a lot of curation, a lot of lists, fun stuff, double features, so we'll kind of dig into that and do, you know, film nerdy stuff. And again, like I said, we'll talk about news. We'll also talk about content from the web. We'd like to talk about what we're doing on other platforms, what our guests are doing. So we'll get to all that. Lastly, a little bit of housekeeping. This actually came up on Criterion Close Up, and I know it's come up on a lot of other shows, but profanity and spoilers. Don't care. Cuss. We're going to cuss. So if you are going to drive around with your kids, just be warned, there could be a F-bomb. In fact, let's all get it out of our system, everybody.
Fuck,
shit, piss.
Darth Vader's Luke Skywalker's fucking father.
You motherfucker. Now, we'll try it. We'll cuss, but it's not going to be like the Howard Stern show. It's going to be, Howard Stern show is not like the Howard Stern show, but it's going to be as clean as we can get it. But you know, we're not going to censor ourselves if we don't want to. And spoilers, you know, we'll be careful. We know I don't like to be spoiled on something I haven't seen, but you know, if something comes, if it's a 100-year-old movie, or if it's The Sixth Sense, not that we'll ever talk about The Sixth Sense here, but you know, we are going to get into that. He's dead the whole time. Are you guys ready? Ready to move forward on this? This battleship.
Let's do this.
Yes. Ready.
All right. Well, we're going to go around in a table, as I mentioned. And so, first, let's talk about the New Year's drawing. Criterion released a day early this year. I guess last year they did the same on December 31st. I was down south tanning myself, but I made time to geek out on it some. But they released their wacky New Year's drawing, which is a group of drawings from Jason Polan. There's some connections and theme, and some not so much. And these just tease what's coming, and they're a lot of fun, just like the monthly clues, where we get to put our little detective glasses on and try to figure out what they're telling us is going to come out this year, hopefully, usually. So on this, we'll go around the room, but I'll kind of go through some of what I've pieced out as the definites. And first off, if you want to actually look at the drawing and see a good breakdown, I recommend going to Criterion Cast. Ryan does a nice little carve out of all the notable drawings and kind of breaks down what we think things are. So, okay, definites, and feel free to correct me if you think these aren't as definite as I do, but I see 16 Candles, Buena Vista Social Club by Wim Wenders, D-Pan by Audiard, Ghost World, which is Ghost Were on the drawing, Tampopo, I don't know how you say that, Jean Dielman, Quai de Commerce, Stock R, the Marseilles Trilogy, or the Fanny Trilogy as it's often called, They Live by Night, and I think that's all the definites. So, Cole, what do you think? Anything catch your eye in the New Year's drawing?
The one thing that I am super excited about is the mysterious object at noon, the Apichapong Weerasethakul film, which is, I think, represented by the box with the question mark and the clock there on the floor. There
I had
are,
that as a possible. I was hoping that was what it. I haven't seen it, but that's an interesting release.
Yeah, there are certain directors that I think, you know, you resonate with. I know for Erica, it's Woody Allen. For Aaron, it's Renoir. Mark, maybe Stanley Kubrick. Matt's taste is so varied that I probably couldn't even pin one down.
Matt's is whatever Aaron
likes.
It's the
Fast and Furious series.
That's right.
It's really big.
For me, so far in the collection, it's been Cassavetes. But I would love if this clue was a double clue and the box also represented a We're a Set of Cool box set, because that would thrill me.
Wow.
I love fabulous. Uncle Boon Me, Syndromes in a Century, Tropical Malady. If I could get a box set with all of that stuff in it, I would be pleased to no end.
If I got a box out of that, my wife would sleep very well. I think she tried to watch one of them with me. I think it was Tropical Malady. Is that the one with the guy in the tree for half an hour?
That's Uncle Boon Me, I think. Well, but it depends on...
depends on the segment.
What you mean by forest or tree,
yes,
I guess.
Yes, and long time.
Yeah. Right. They are very meditative. They are definitely on my wavelength. I'm a big fan of slow cinema in general. Mm-hmm. And... I really love those movies.
And we showed Uncle Boon Me for one of our movie nights, and it was a huge hit, actually.
Yeah, I was surprised at how many people that are just general filmgoers that are friends of ours really liked it.
Yeah, I respect his work, but it's tough for me to motivate myself. I love a lot of slow cinema, but the really slow stuff, it's kind of a weekend morning after four cups of coffee. Then maybe I'll be up to, and I can't say his name, too many letters.
Well,
I think he has.
Go ahead.
I think he has a Phantom page too, doesn't he?
Yes,
he does. He does.
Pretty good chance of it. Yeah, that's a. Although the Criterion Forum people were saying that could be a lot of things. So
I think that I think it's a definite. I have to say, I think that it's too the connection between those two is too close. You know, I joked on the group that it was Gremlins, but I don't think something tells me that's not coming anytime soon. But I think the two things that really excite me about having him in the collection is that first of all, you know, we get some film that veers towards experimentalism, but we don't get a lot of contemporary film that does that, and I think there needs to be more of that. And I wouldn't go so far as to, you know, compare him to someone like Brakhage, but I think that, you know, on the spectrum of narrative cinema, he definitely trends in that direction. And then the second thing, and the thing I'm really excited about, is to have anybody from Southeast Asia in the collection, because it's been quite a while.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm very conscious of, the giant geographical holes that are in the collection. And I think the more, you know, even really just mainland Asia in general, if you don't count Russia, there's practically nothing. So I think just more Asian films, more Southeast Asian films, more films that come from regions that we aren't familiar with will make the collection as a whole a richer set of films.
Yeah, I don't think we have any Thai directors. I actually lived in Thailand a long, long time ago, but it doesn't have a... I mean, I think... I'm not going to say his name, but A.W.
Just call him Joe.
Pretty, yeah.
In the States, he's known as Joe.
So he goes by Joe.
Yeah, oh, he does? Okay, good. Thank you, Joe. But I think he's pretty representative of art cinema in Thailand. I don't know that there's much more, but I don't know. So I could be wrong. I'm sure I'll be corrected on that. All right, well, Erica,
this
do you
is,
have...
Oh,
sorry, Mark.
Sorry, Aaron. I was just going to mention, this is one that's available from Second Run in the UK currently on Blu-ray. And they're known as a mainly DVD company. They've started to foray into Blu-ray. This is one of the few that they have on Blu-ray. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, we talked about that on the wish list, Shop on Main Street. They did it. I forget. It's a different title in the UK, but I think that was them that put that out a couple months ago. So, Erica, I know you're a huge film buff and you have great taste, but you're not really a Criterion-specific person, unlike us, but you're married to one. So, I'm curious your thoughts on this drawing. Anything jump out at you?
I am, I'm going to correct you slightly, but agree with you for the most part. I am a huge Criterion fan. I find it wonderful to be married to a much bigger Criterion buff because it gives me a lot of interesting points of entry that I didn't have before. And so in looking at the drawing, I was a little stumped by quite a few of the titles and also the rumors and the surmises. For example, I was trying to go through all of the foreign language words for hand that I could think of to try to put together the T and the hand. And I asked Cole at one point, is Tandy Newton in anything that might be coming out?
Westworld's coming to the Criterion Collection.
Right. So I'm really excited by a lot of these that I haven't seen before. I think most high on my list is They Live by Night because that hits me where I live every time. That's my favorite genre and period. So I'm really excited about
Nick Ray.
And I want to go back to Mark for just a second. I know he's coming up next. You mentioned the wish list episode. Does any of this fulfill those wishes that you guys had tossed around at the end of the year?
The only one I think is Stalker that I had mentioned from Filmstruck. I think everything else is some known, some new, not known. So, yeah, that's it.
Back in my brain, I'm sure there has to be. We talked about so many different films. I'll circle back to that.
They Live by Night would be my second choice out of all the things I'm probably most excited about because, like you, that subgenre of young lovers on the run, criminal young lovers on the run, you know, They Live by Night echoes all the way through to everything from Badlands to Natural Born Killers. And if nothing else, it opens the door a little bit more for Gun Crazy to sneak in the collection, which is one of my favorite films of all time.
I can say that the very last one on your list would be 16 Candles, right?
Yes.
You have no interest
that
whatsoever.
That is the one I am least excited about.
That's going to be the most controversial, And that's also, I think, clearly the most obvious of the clues. I mean, come on, 16 Candles, they're right there.
My wife is very excited for that one, so that may be her Criterion entry point.
I haven't seen it for 30 years, so I won't judge. Either. But who knows? Maybe there's some art. Maybe it's the next Tootsie. What do you think, Mark? Anything jump out at you?
Well, the only thing I mean, excited to see what we're getting. One thing I noted was I was looking at the ghost that is probably Ghost World, but I kept thinking, what is that ghost doing? Is it dancing? And I was trying to find a ghost dance kind of film, but I didn't find anything there. The other thing that kind of stood out to me that I keep coming back to is the bottle on the table there. Where Gene is cooking. I keep wondering if maybe that is a bottle. It's either a bottle of booze or poison, right? So
it's been hotly debated.
Yeah, I wonder if maybe it's La Poison, the Sacha Guitry film, because that's available from the Masters of Cinema in the UK. We got to talk on Criterion Close-Up recently on the French 2 episode a lot about Michel Simon, and it's just a great black comedy. So that's my hot take, is that's La Poison.
Yeah, somebody pointed out, I think in one of the Facebook groups, that XX is actually doesn't mean poison. You know, Skull and Crossbones means poison.
That makes sense.
But that actually represents alcohol. And I think it was Trevor, our good friend Trevor, mentioned that on another clue they also used XX. So although if it's poison, that the Guitry was speculated, also some people said arsenic and old lace, but that's probably like the go-to pick if you're gonna say poison.
If it is booze, I think someone probably mentioned that one.
If it's booze, it could be so many different things, so there are a couple that aren't figured out yet, so Matt, you got any thoughts?
Well, on that last point, the R waving at the T has been haunting me for the last couple of weeks. I cannot figure out what that would signify. My big stretch on that one, it's been vaguely rumored as coming to Criterion, would be The Wedding Banquet, because... So, and bear with me here. There's an R, an S, and a T, and an S comes between R and T, And so the implication there, Wedding Banquet is the Ang Lee movie about a gay man is in a relationship and pretends to marry a woman to placate his family. So that's my incredible stretch for the RST clue. And even though the S and the R sort of, you know, apply to other clues, just the fact that that's a T waving at them, it just seems like that's all connected in some way. So that's my big guess.
Well, I did see that is it the Family Trilogy?
Yeah.
Is that what they call it? That was speculated, and I can't remember if it was from some other rumors or from this. Actually, it might have been you, Matt. That's how much of your stuff I see. But that was speculated to come. And I know Farewell, My Concubine came out, I think, last year from BFI, and I haven't watched it yet. But
yeah, I think Keith mentioned that trilogy was coming or had been rumored to be coming.
Right.
So, and I mean, of those three, I think Eat, Drink, Man, Woman is the best and probably my favorite Ang Lee movie in general. But I think all three are really strong and definitely worthy of the collection. I think the other surprising thing to me about this clue, this New Year's drawing, is that there weren't a whole lot of surprises here.
Except for that we couldn't figure out some.
Yeah, stuff, yeah, exactly.
That's every year,
right? But they Live by Night might be the sort of most obscure thing that is definitively confirmed here. Obviously, 16 Candles is a bit of a surprise, but John Hughes had a Phantom Page, which already generated enough controversy to begin with. But other than that, there's all of these titles. Oh, and Mysterious Object at Noon, although he also had a Phantom Page. So, there's not a lot here that you're saying, oh my God, they're getting that. Wow, where did that come from? But maybe that's just because we are way too interested in this stuff and hear about it all before it comes down the pike.
Well, I think Ghost World, that had been hinted years ago. I think even Ryan, Criterion Cast, had something about it. And Stalker, I think that's a big one because even though it was on Filmstruck and it had that wacky C, we don't really know how the rights work for Filmstruck. You know, if we know that there's digital rights and streaming rights. So I don't think just because a movie's on Filmstruck doesn't mean it's going to be released physically. The most obscure to me, which isn't a surprise at all, was the Fanny Trilogy or the Marseille Trilogy. I've always called it a Fanny Trilogy, and I own the French, I think that's what it's called, which was a waste of money, as it turned out. But, of course, I'm into French cinema. Mark and I are doing this series. And, in fact, we were going to do an episode that included Pagnol. I think we were going to do that next month or the month after. I forget. But we had to postpone that because we're obviously going to wait for this to come out to do it right. But real quick, I'll also mention some of the other possibles. I think one thing that's interesting, and probably should move on and not spend too much time on the clue, but there's a big Cuba theme. And so some people threw out Soy Cuba, I Am Cuba, which Milestone has, but you never know. And then I thought also Memories of Underdevelopment, and I think the definite part is Buena Vista Social Club. But Cuba is very prominent in the clue. There's two flags, so it could represent more films. And then also that painting on the wall, you know, it's a painting or a picture, or it could be a window. Actually, it probably is a window. A Brighter Summer Day is coming to the collection, guys. Spoiler.
Really?
Yeah. That could be so many different things. It could be Tree of Life. No, actually, it could be Tree of Life. I don't know. So we'll probably get an announcement, and we'll smack our foreheads, and there it was. So, okay, well, shall we move on? Any last burning thoughts about the New Year's drawing?
Nope.
Excited.
Take that as a no. Yeah, it's going to be quite... I'm happy. I think there's some great releases coming out. Some not so great, but I'll spare my thoughts on those until they come out. Okay, well, let's get into our short takes. Again, what this is everybody that's a guest on the show watches a Criterion, and I assume that everybody here definitely has watched a Criterion recently, but it can be a fresh, recent watch. It can be something they watched a couple months ago. Prefer it to be in the collection, but it doesn't have to be out. Like, for example, if say I had a screener to camera person, I might use that just to tease that it's coming out. But I think this week we have everything already as releases. So Cole, you want to kick us off?
Sure. My short take this time is for The Asphalt Jungle, the 1950 noir heist film by John Huston. It's one of my absolute favorite genres, and so I was really looking forward to this release. If, for no other reason, similar to what I was saying about They Live by Night, that it opens the door for even more and more films like this. Down the road, potentially, we might get Panic in the Streets, or any number of other twitchy, dark underbelly crime films that I love so much. This time, though, what I found so interesting about this viewing, because this is a rewatch for me at this point, all the things that I liked about the film initially that come up every time, Huston's composition, that great heist sequence, the ill-fated criminals that are barreling towards their self-destruction and there's nothing that you can do to stop it. All of those themes we get in these great crime films. The thing I liked most about it this time, going by the old film school in a box ethos of Criterion, was how much it showed me with its shortcomings. The thing that it really demonstrated to me this time was how interesting it is when you have the absolute right supporting players. For instance, in this case, I think particularly the female leads are miscast. Marilyn Monroe and Gene Hagen this time came up a little bit short for me. And
yeah,
then I started doing a little bit of dream casting in my head, and I thought, what a great movie this would be. I mean, it's a great movie already, but it would put it in the all-timers list if you have, say, a young Gloria Graham in the Marilyn Monroe role. And
yeah,
then if you have Susan Hayward in the Gene Hagen role, you have a firecracker of a movie, because the people that are hitting on all cylinders in this...
James Whitmore
is so great in this. I love him so much.
Jumping on the bars.
Yeah. He's fantastic. And then, but specifically addressing the other female supporting players, you've got Dorothy Tree as Emmerich's wife, and I think her loneliness and her grasping for their love and life that has evaporated is really palpable, and she does a fantastic job. She is spot on. And even the uncredited Helene Stanley as the young girl dancing to the jukebox at the end that distracts him from making his escape. Even that little role, which is pivotal, even though it's tiny, tiny, when it is perfectly cast, it just makes such a difference. And that whole thing about there are no small parts. This movie, this viewing, really exhibited that this time, I thought.
And Sterling Hayden, I think if it had been slightly just a few years later in his career, I think he would have been better.
Yeah.
He misses a couple of notes for me.
This time?
Yes.
Mm. Yeah.
I wasn't as analytical this viewing. For me, I think this is like the prototypical heist film. It might be, I haven't dug into this, but it might be one of the earliest heist films. So I think the first time I watched it, I was thinking, oh, it's yet another heist film, because so many other films have co-opted, some very well, like Rififi, I think, is an excellent heist film that borrows a little here. But when I rewatched it, I don't love it, but I was a little more impressed with, I guess, how it set that genre on its feet. And if there's been a bigger and more notable heist film before it, then I apologize, but I can't think of one. I guess nobody else can either.
No.
Yeah, not off the top of my head.
Erica, you want to go with yours now?
I'm thinking about what you just mentioned in passing, Aaron, about timeline and context are really important. And for my short take, I chose Blood Simple from 1984, the Coen brothers film with Frances McDormand and M. Emmett Walsh. And I saw this first in the early 90s, so not when it came out. I had already seen a number of other Coen brothers films before I got to this. And it was also Frances McDormand's debut. I felt the way I felt then when I first saw it, when I just watched it again, which is it was like a breath of fresh air. even mm-hmm. though it seems like they're using their film school knowledge very much. They're sort of pulling out every trick and trope and making it look great and wonderful. And it still manages to feel, and it still manages to feel like a really fresh neo-noir, even now. But again, in viewing it now, it does strike me that when you watch things out of order, it starts to feel, it can start to feel like, oh, I've seen this before. But for this, it was a little bit different for me. It still felt fresh.
Yeah, we did an episode, Mark and I did, and Keith, actually. So I won't repeat what we said there, but it was fun to rewatch this, you know, in hindsight with the Coens filmography, and seeing what, you know, basically they were making it up as they went along. Not that they were literally making it up. They were very meticulous in crafting this movie and showed how they would become the filmmakers they would. But I think it's a special movie, so that's a good choice. I really liked the Criterion release, too. I really liked the diagramming. What do we call that, Mark? A John Madden thing?
The telestrator?
Yeah.
The football telestrator. That was great. I'd love to see him do, you know, some more of that. Yeah.
I think describing it as a breath of fresh air is really great, and I think it's also applicable to where it rests in film history, because I think the 80s were a rough time for American movies in a lot of ways. And I think even though there were some neo-noirs that came out a couple years prior to Blood Simple, you know, movies like Body Heat and things like that, for me, when I first saw this in the late 90s, when I kind of dismissed the 80s as the realm of, you know, well, the cheesy John Hughes movies and things like that, I saw a movie like this and I realized, you know, this is really carrying the torch for that decade in a lot of ways in terms of what, you know, the really great filmmakers that were sort of starting to make movies at that point. And obviously the Coens were very close with Sam Raimi, and I see a lot of that scrappiness in Blood Simple that Raimi had in the Evil Dead movies. Of course, the Coens are much more meticulous than Raimi is, so that sort of plays out in that way. But I think just how different the movie feels from everything else that was around it at that time is... still, you can still get that sense of it now watching it, even out of that context.
And also, just Emmett Walsh rocks. he chews scenery, but he's great. And it's funny too. He's funny, and I won't. I know we said we'll spoil films, but I'll hold back on this one because it's worth hearing the end of the movie and the punchline, as we put it. Mark, do you have a short take for us?
I do. I got to check out one of the December releases. I picked up during the sale. Barnes & Noble had a 40% off sale, so I grabbed them all and popped in Roma, or Fellini's Roma, however you want to refer to it, the 1972 film. I wouldn't call myself a Fellini student. I've actually been spent most of my Fellini time in his early work, really from this 50s and 60s up until 8.5, and the only one I've really seen of his later work is Amarcord, which I've seen a couple times. And this Roma came out a year before Amarcord, in 1972. And it's very. It was interesting to kind of go back and watch Roma. I think, like every Fellini film, and probably every Criterion film for that matter, it will get better with age, and, you know, kind of knowing what the filmmaker is going for going in, for me, getting a sense of what is presented on screen. And I certainly, this one is I don't know if you'd call it a love letter, kind of reflecting back on the city of Rome. It goes back and forth in time between the 30s and present day and the 60s. And it's interesting in how it does that. It includes voiceover from Fellini. There's some, breaking the fourth wall, self-reflexive. You see, you know, Fellini actually making the film itself on a highway. And, you know, we go back in time 2,000 years to where they find a Roman house Very beautiful Roman house that has been preserved when they're building, you know, the subway. So there's kind of a joining of times, a mixing of time frames, kind of, you know, really, I guess you'd say, clashing between the present day and old Rome. So this film overall is, I think it's probably more difficult for audiences to connect with. It was for me on first watch than maybe some of his early films and even Armacord, because I think Armacord does have, even though it's a series of vignettes, it's does have maybe a more of a narrative and more of a connective tissue than this one. But I have a feeling, you know, reading the essay and looking back on it, that, you know, this one probably has more of a connective tissue the more you're removed from it. And of course it has that just, you know, just wonderful fashion show from the you know, the Catholic Church there. So but I guess as a theme, the main thing I pulled out of it, or the number one theme, I actually pulled out a lot of quotes. Like, you know, during the brothel scene, there's a quote that is, a good man is hard to find, but a hard man is good to find, which I thought was fabulous. And you know, the fashion show features, you know, the world must follow the church, not vice versa. So, but I think my favorite scene was probably where they, you know, they're building the subway and you have that, you know, conjoining of the 2,000-year-old house and, you know, the modernity of building a subway. You know, this thing would have been preserved for forever. But you see maybe it's inevitable, maybe it's the polluted air, maybe it's just showing the destruction of, you know, old Rome in that scene. But I really like the way that was handled. So, yeah, pretty positive overall on it, but just not, you know, not one of my favorite Fellinis on first watch.
Yeah, Lee Fellini's a challenge. I'm actually a big fan of Satyricon, which is also challenging, and I think really requires a couple watches to really dig into. Roma, yeah, I've seen it once. I watched The Masters of Cinema, and the shrink wrap is still on my Criterion, so I'll take it off eventually and rewatch it. Matt, you've seen everything. Do you like Roma?
I do like Roma, actually. I am not, similar to you, a big late Fellini fan. I much prefer 8.5 and previous. Knights of Cabiria is probably my favorite Fellini.
Love it.
And I find his later work... it seems weird to say about somebody as great as Fellini, but very self-indulgent. And
I think that's,
so I even have trouble with Armacord, actually. You know, there's bits and pieces of it that I really like. But I think Roma, of his later work that I have seen, is probably my favorite. Well, I also really love Juliet of the Spirits. But I think Roma is so loose and casual as to almost seem like he tossed it off in, you know, in a day. And I think that there's more to it than that. And I think the way he sort of wove together all of the different threads into a sort of semi-autobiographical meta commentary on his relationship with Rome makes it a real nice companion piece to 8.5. And I think those elements are sort of easy to overlook because there's so much of the late Fellini stuff in here, of like the formless plot and all the weird looking people and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And I think it kind of gets away from sort of his very personal story that he's telling here about, you know, one of the great cities in the world. And I think that makes it a sort of endlessly engaging movie.
I do want to correct one thing. I prefer early Fellini by a long shot, but I do like some of his later work. I agree with you. Very indulgent. And actually, I do like Juliet of the Spirits because it's a nice blending of the early stuff and the kind of has moments of the surreal that it kind of injects into the film. Kind of saw where he was going there. But Matt, I think I'm going to like this film.
Well, you got
look at the logo.
You guys did all different recent releases, so I thought I'd pull something out of obscurity and try to get it a bigger audience. I picked. I don't know if you guys have heard of it, but I picked a movie called Persona. It's a what? Yeah. It's a
who directed that?
I think it was Ingrid Bergman, but I'm not sure. it's so yeah. I watched Persona this week, and one of the things that you know I for people who don't know, I went through and watched all of the Criterion Spine numbers that I hadn't seen over the last 5 or 6 years, which was spectacular, and I was exposed to a lot of great new movies. But one thing that it did was put on the back burner a lot of the great movies that I had seen previously, and so I just hadn't. It's been quite a while since I've actually sat down and watched Persona, and it was a remarkable experience, as it was the first time I watched it. But it was I took two things away from it that I hadn't really thought about before. The first thing is, I think when you watch a movie like Persona that has such a huge reputation and is sort of this towering masterpiece in film history, It's really easy to think that everything in the movie was not created by a human, that it was sort of all preordained to appear on the screen in this perfect manner that it appears. And watching it this time, I really got the sense of Bergman's personality coming through and sort of stream of consciousness coming through in the movie. And it made the movie just so much richer for me, because it's not in any way preordained that this movie was going to be successful and was going to work. And in fact, it, you know, as they mention in the liner notes, he shot practically a whole movie and got rid of it, before they, filmed what, you know, eventually ended up in the movie. So I think, watching it this time, I really saw how he departed from his previous films and the risks that he was taking. And at the same time, the fact that he had been making movies for 20 years allowed him to have the confidence to take those risks and to do something that he hadn't done before. And you just see it pay off in this really remarkable way where, he's able to blend the things that are really confidently Bergman and in his wheelhouse with the things that he hadn't really done before, you know, like that opening scene, which is still so such a stunner. That was really impressive to me. The other thing I really couldn't stop thinking about through the whole movie was just how much Hitchcock I saw in the movie. I'd never really thought about it before, but in particular, Vertigo and Psycho kept coming up for me. Vertigo, obviously, with the two women and their sort of merging of personalities and how they are kind of intended to be two sides of the same coin for Jimmy Stewart, who in this case would be Ingmar Bergman behind the camera. And Psycho, just in the stark black and white cinematography and the way that he uses both montage and music to sort of strike this very unsettling tone that makes you kind of wonder how much you can trust the filmmaker and trust what you're seeing on screen. And I think it, you know, obviously Hitchcock used it for shock effect, but I think Bergman really uses it to present sort of his psychological well-being at the time of conceiving of this concept of two women that are the same person. And I have to think he thought about that. I mean, Psycho was such a sort of thunderbolt on the film scene, so it just seems to me like there was something in, whether it was conscious or in the back of his mind, that that he was saying, you know, this is kind of my Psycho, where I'm taking my older style at this point in the late 60s, where films are getting a little bit more revolutionary, and and really surprising the audience with something that still stays true to who I am as a filmmaker, but, you know, kicks it up to a different level.
And the Hitchcock thing is something I haven't thought of before. By the way, this is one of my favorite films of all time, probably top 2, 3, 4 maybe, or 2 probably. So I could, if I continue talking, it'll be a whole new episode. But one thing that, like the Freshman 101 take is, I think the intro and the shower scene, I think you can see some influence there with the editing there and how he cut together that intro, which I think is one of the best intros of film, one of the best examples of experimental cinema, I think. So, good choice. All right, anybody have anything to say about Persona?
Aside from the fact that Lee Ullman can do no wrong.
Yeah, if you say anything bad about it, I'm kicking you off the show.
That's one that's still a dual format, and I hope they never break up that set. I would just love to see that.
Beautiful set.
Beautiful box.
Yeah, beautiful book.
Beautiful box. Yeah. And I love the documentary that comes with it. I've said this many times, I'm not a crier at cinema, but that one got to me. You know, the fact that this long relationship between these two, you know, romantic and not so romantic. Yeah, if you haven't seen that, I recommend that, especially if you're a Liv and Ingmar fan. All right, well, my turn is not as deep as Persona, but it's pretty good. I picked The Squid and the Whale, which is another recent release. I believe it's 2005. And this was a rewatch for me, and I'm going to be honest that I didn't really like it the first time. Scratch that. I did like it, but I kind of had a hot take. I didn't like one thing they did with a song. It just, my bullshit detector went off, and I that kind of clouded my opinion of the film. And also, I saw it when it came out. It was this huge indie darling. It was, came right out of Sundance. Everybody was talking about it. I don't think it won many awards, but it felt like it did. So I do like Criterion giving me some opportunities to find some films that are worth watching a second time and revisiting, and hopefully 16 Candles is going to have the same impact. But watching it a second time was a much better experience for me. And I think kind of like what you were saying with Blood Simple, Erica, also seeing what Baumbach had done the rest of his career, I think helps. I'm a fan of Baumbach. I'm a little more hit and miss. I think his big hits for me, Francis Ha is a big one, are pretty high. And then some of his misses, I'm not going to say because I'm going to get hate mail.
I'll say it. Margot at the Wedding is the worst.
I was
movie
just
ever
about to
made.
Do the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not
I
the one.
That.
Oh, it's so there's hateful.
There's another one I'm not going to say because a lot of people love it. But all right, Mistress America. Sorry, there it is. Not a fan, but I'm willing to give that one another look someday. But anyway, kind of removing that little zeitgeisty opinion of the film, you know, rubbing my nose at anything that's too buzzed about because it's just, I don't know, trying to be cool maybe, I don't know. This time, watching it with like an honest set of eyes, trying to see the emotional impact, it meant more for me. I saw that it was a very honest film from Baumbach. I could tell it was a very personal film, and I see a lot of the themes that would reverberate throughout the rest of his career. It had a lot of heart and a lot of comedy too. I didn't remember how funny it was, and maybe that's because I've kind of become some of that insufferable intellectual. That not quite to the Jeff Daniels level, but I could see that you know, talking about Persona or later Fellini, I could see somebody flinging that at me, but not nearly to that extent. But I'm sure Baumbach had seen it. His dad was a professor, so he kind of had a bird's eye view of that sort of New York intellectualism, which, you know, he's kind of made a career about. So it did seem to be. Yeah, honest and a little satirical too, and also seeing Jesse Eisenberg. I love The Social Network, but aside from that, I'm kind of mixed on him as an actor. I think he's kind of one note. He kind of plays really the kind of character he played here, this quasi intellectual, sometimes not quasi, Facebook he plays a very intelligent man that was very successful. But I think this time actually was one of his most sensitive roles, and you could really poke holes at his this artifice that he was projecting about him being this intellectual. He's really trying to be his dad, and he's really just being superficial and just parroting a lot of things that that his dad said, which is often talking about books like The Metamorphosis, which is he's never read, but he calls it a masterpiece. I've seen people do that about cinema, and I'm like, why do you care that much? The comedy, he remarks that Metamorphosis is Kafka-esque. Well, no shit, it's Kafka. It's great. So I did enjoy it the second time around quite a bit more. The performances, Laura Linney is a rock star. She's tremendous and kind of understated, but does a lot with a little. And I think Jeff Daniels was really good here. I don't think he's not on the same level as Linney, but he has his moments. I'm glad that Criterion put this back out, and I'm glad I gave it a second chance. So, any lovers or haters of The Squid and the Whale?
I haven't actually seen it.
I'm going to borrow a phrase that I think Cole uses is this one hits me where I live. This is one that just hits home. You know, he said autobiographical, and so it's hard for me to kind of remove myself from that part of it. But I've only seen it once, but this was actually I think my first Baumbach and drew me in. I was certainly a fan on first watch, and I just as a you mentioned Laura Linney, I wasn't as big a fan of her in this film, although I did watch one recently, You Can Count on Me.
Oh, that's great.
Just because of I knew Manchester by the Sea had just come out, and I wanted to see, and I'd heard You Can Count on Me, it was great, and so I watched that. So it kind of makes me want to, you know, with your praise of her in this film, go back and watch her in this film and see if I agree. But yeah, I'm certainly a fan of this one.
Turn off the podcast, go watch it now. It's worth it. That was the film that put Laura Linney on my radar, and her and Ruffalo in that film are remarkable. Okay, so moving right along, we're going to talk about Filmstruck, and this is a first of any podcast I've heard, so I'm proud of that. But so Filmstruck, if you haven't tried it out yet, I do recommend it. It has a few bugs here and there, but I think it's just interesting the way they organize the movies, and not to mention just the vast library, but how they put them together and curate them. I've kind of become a Filmstruck junkie, checking it every few days just to see what they come out with. So they have a main channel, which is the cheaper version, and then they have the Criterion channel, which is pretty much everything. It's $100 for a year, which I just re-upped because I was a beta person, so I had it free for the rest of the year, but I didn't waste much time. So anyway, on the main channel right now, I just kind of jotted down a few of the little curated groups they have. One is the City of Love, which is movies about Paris, which I think is pretty cool. There's another one that's How to Make a Movie, which is films about film, some of which we've talked about. And I do enjoy it, like The Player, I think, was on there, maybe Day for Night. The Cotsy Trilogy, which is interesting. I'm a big fan of the first one and moderate fan of the other two. Then there's also Dusan. Cole, can you help me out?
Makaveyev?
Makaveyev, that's what I was just about to say. His films, I've seen a handful. Man is Not a Bird, I remember. I like him. I haven't really jumped too deep into that Eclipse that he has, but I think he's worth it. Oh, and also he has a DVD of WR. Is that
The
right?
Mysteries of the Organism, yeah. And then as Sweet Movie as well.
Sweet Movie, yeah.
Sweet Movie, right. I've heard not
those,
so great.
Those are not for everybody.
Which makes them perfect for me.
There you go. That's right. There's another one that was directed by Alain Resnais, which I'm a big fan of his. And some of these might be old. I haven't been tracking them since day one, but I've noticed they kind of recycle some of the same groupings, and then they have new ones every now and then. I think the Criterion Channel new ones are pretty regular. I think they do spend more time curating those. So I'll jump into that. They've been doing double features, They did a great one for New Year's. I can't think of many better ones. They did Hobson's Choice and With Noel and I for New Year's. I don't know if you're a fan of alcoholic. Maybe that's the XX on the on the bottle. Actually, either one of those would work. But yeah, Glug Glug, that's both drinking movies. With Noel, I think, is a classic. They also did Passionless Moments by Jane Campion, and then Me and You and Everyone We Know by Miranda July. And that's an interesting one, speaking of indies from the 2000s. So that is pretty widely speculated that that'll come out on disc, too, the July film. Are you guys fans or not fans? Anybody?
I liked it but didn't love it. But I love John Hawks. I think this is the sentiment that a lot of people express, that maybe her as a filmmaker, it might be a little too precious for their taste, but he is enough to draw them in to get them to watch it. I love him so much. And even when he's only given a little bit to do, the guy is super interesting. So I will give it a shot. It's one of those instances, maybe with The Squid and the Whale for you, that an opportunity to revisit it for me will likely show me things that I did not catch the first time.
Yeah, and it had that indie cute vibe. A lot of that is July. You know, she's a performance artist, and also that was kind of the thing in the mid-90s, the mid-aughts, is indie cute. Actually, it's kind of still is a thing, but she kind of, I think her aesthetic kind of embodies that. And yeah, I found that a little distracting sometimes, but I did like. I did love John Hawks. I think that was my first exposure to him, if I remember. And there were some funny moments, I remember. But, yeah, I'm willing to give it another look. I'll wait for the disc if it happens. And if it doesn't happen, I'm never going to think about it again. Anybody else a fan or not?
I do not care for this movie. But I am willing to give it another shot, like you guys. I really, it just rubbed me the wrong way. I found it very precious, and it didn't feel to me like there was anything particularly new about the way that she put the movie together. It was, you know, it's been 10 years since I saw it, so I don't remember the details, but it felt very much like, sort of another one of those movies from the mid 2000s that, that had a bunch of people in it. And there was some weird humor that was a little off and quirky and isn't it really cute? You know, I wouldn't want to damn it with comparing it to Garden State, but I do feel like, I put it a little bit in that category. But I also, do not hate, the fact that it's coming to the collection as much as if Garden State came to the collection, because that would be, I would maybe have to take up arms if that happened. This one, I understand, you know, a lot of people who I really respect really like this movie. And so I think, you know, I'm fine with it, and I am willing to give it another shot. I do really love this new feature of the short and a feature that go together. I haven't watched this Campion short, even though I really love her and want her to be in the collection more. I'd love to see them wrestle the piano away from, I think it's a Miramax movie. But I think there was a short that was attached, I think, to Mouchette, the Bresson movie, called Needle.
Right.
That I highly recommend. It's about 20 minutes, and I really, really loved that. That's still on the service. So if anybody is looking for a short that is influenced by Bresson, or is looking for a short made by a great female filmmaker, Needle is really good and shows a lot of promise.
I'll have to check it out. Criterion is, and they've made it this clear that they are... there's an initiative to include more female directors, which I think is great, and I think a lot of them are excellent films. I'm really looking forward to, like, Camera Person, for example.
I had the opportunity to see Camera Person, and it's fantastic.
Great.
I really loved it. It was one of those films that it will show you something, and then you'll sort of forget about it, and then when it reintroduces that thing after you've had the context of the previous hour or so, it completely changes the way you saw it the first time. It's all about context I couldn't recommend it highly enough.
Interesting, huh?
It's exciting.
Yeah. And I liked Heart of a Dog too. So
yeah.
Not to get on too much of a tangent, but I'm cool with this direction, and I like any them just including modern films too. I think they had gotten away from that a little bit.
Agreed.
You know, they did a bunch of late aughts movies, 2008, 2009, and now it's just been sprinkled in. So anyway, back to double features. They put one out Friday, and I think they put them out every Tuesday and Friday. Is that right? The one this past Friday was Bicycle Thieves and Kid with a Bike, which is awesome. And I hadn't seen the Dardenne's one. It's been high on my list. I don't know why I hadn't gotten around to it. I just hadn't. So I had some free time. We had a tenth of an inch of snow. So I said, what the hell? That's a great excuse. So I watched it, and I watched both. I rewatched Bicycle Thieves in the evening. And so it was a first-time viewing, but if you've seen a Dardenne film, you know, you're not going to – it's not really going to surprise you, but you're going to be – still be impressed by their filmmaking, their chops. But you know, it has the same close-up Steadicam. Actually, this one was not as close-up as some of their others, but it's much, very much in the vein of their other work. And then Bicycle Thieves is a masterpiece. Sorry, this was my second time watching it, but I think I've seen that ending like 10 times, just in clips or in class. And that ending just is amazing. It's if you're not moved from that ending, you're not human. So I thought this was a good pairing, not just because they both have bikes. I know that's pretty convenient, but I think they both have a sense of neorealism, and I think the Dardennes definitely do. They do the amateur actors with some professionals. I didn't realize that the girl from Hot Tension plays the mother. I thought that was interesting.
Oh wow, we didn't pick up on that.
And then the kid, there's apparently homages to Thieves. I'd have to, you know, I just watched it yesterday, and Dardenne movies need time to sink in, and sometimes another visit or two. So I don't really have any deep insights, but I did see that the father-son relationship can't be much different in Kid with a Bike and Bicycle Thieves, just different nature of their relationship. The Kid with the Bike is much more Dardenne than De Sica, as far as how that father and the relationships are presented. But there's a lot in common. They're both very existential. They both live in poverty. So they're both excellent movies. Of course, you can't compare anything really coming out today with Bicycle Thieves. Sorry to crap on modern film, but you just can't. Did anybody watch any of these? Or, well, I'm sure you've guys probably seen both of these.
Yeah, we're big Dardenne fans here.
We've done shows on Kid with a Bike and 2 Days, One Night pretty recently, too.
Oh,
so
you did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Kid with a Bike is one of my favorite of the IFC films that they grabbed. It's just such a beautiful, humanistic film. It's probably my favorite of the Dardennes in the collection, although I think maybe Rosetta is more sort of impressive in its cinematic scale.
Yes. I'm with you on the Rosetta thing. I like the stuff to be more turbulent emotionally, I guess.
Yes, yes.
And so that one really got me.
Yeah, I think Rosetta's probably the best. I'd have to look at the films in the collection, but I think that's my favorite as well. I'd put this above 2 Days, One Night. Sorry, Erica.
No problem. And actually, I misspoke earlier. I'm blending our show and our movie night, so we've covered them in different ways. But I'm thinking about the female angle in Kid with a Bike and 2 Days, One Night compared to the Miranda July stuff. And it almost starts to feel a little bit like tokenism when you come to Miranda July, mm-hmm. who actually, she's able to attract all of these people because of this fantastic body of work that she has outside of film,
right.
and what she's been doing for decades at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't feel that what she's done so far has quite lived up to what she is probably capable of. Yet, that work is represented in Criterion, which is a good and a bad thing. And then you have these amazing performances in the Dardenne films, and those are star turns, for lack of a better word, and powerhouse. And I want to see more of that represented as well.
Mm-hmm.
I like that they cast amateur actors and then they add those actors to their stable. So what's his name? Gourmet is in all of them, and then Jeremy, I forget his last name, the blonde kid from Everything, the father in Kid with a Bike. He's in pretty much all their movies. But any other thoughts on Thieves or Bike?
Bicycle Thieves is okay.
Really?
No, not really.
Not really.
It's pretty spectacular, and that's a good movie to watch every few years to remind you that people are all right.
So okay, well, also in the Criterion channel, I saw there was a Roger Vadim and Brigit Bardot little piece, and it had a few of their films. It was called Creative Marriages, and it had a little 10-minute supplement that talked about their well, not just about Bardot, but Roger Vadim and his style, which was to showcase really who he was dating, or maybe who he wanted to date, or both. I'm not a big Vadim fan. I know God Created Women is in the collection. I saw it a while ago, and yeah, not too into it. But I thought this was an interesting piece. I think it pretty much summed up his deal. So, any Vadim fans or Bardot fans in this room?
Not particularly.
Hard not to be a Bardot fan.
I don't.
I think it's pretty.
I think it's easy
not to.
I think God Created Woman has to be one of the worst movies in the collection, and I mean, it's both sort of lifeless as a film and sort of borderline racist, and just has. I
well,
mean,
so
it's just
Bardot.
So dated in so many ways, and it's, you know, it's an interesting movie from the perspective of, oh, this is what people had to watch before there was the internet. But other than that, I don't really see the purpose. But you know, I like Contempt. That's about it.
Yeah.
I think I give it credit for being subversive and for placing sex into an art film. I think it was. I mean, it's not that wasn't happening. I mean, look at any Bergman film of the 50s. But he ratcheted up a notch. So yeah, it was daring. But I'm with you. I don't like it either. So Mark, you had pointed out before we recorded that The Lodger showed up on the Criterion Channel, and I'm not going to take credit because nothing's happened yet, but that was part of my my choices on the wish list episode. That's Hitchcock's silent feature. What year was that? Was it 29?
27.
27. So, and actually, I haven't seen that, so I don't know if it's any good.
It's very good.
But I haven't either.
Oh, good. I didn't doubt it. So I haven't seen this, but this again gives me some optimism that it'll come out on disc. It's there's
early
a number.
Hitchcock box. It's got to be coming.
That's what I plugged. So, any fans of the Lodger besides you, Matt?
Oh, we definitely me. I'm not sure about you.
I still haven't seen it.
I like it in all its incarnations, both the Hitchcock and the John Brom,
the Laird Krieger. Yeah, that's great.
I haven't seen that one either, so maybe that would be a nice double feature. They did that with The Lower Depths. I'd like to see them do that again.
That would be a dream. I love John Brom so much. All of that output with The Undying Monster. Yeah, he's one of my. He made some of the greatest Twilight Zone episodes. The guy is really underrated, I think, when it comes to mood and atmosphere.
If we could have just recast Merle Oberon, because she's like a brick in that thing.
Yeah, well, that's part of the studio system, too.
Yeah.
I doubt they would do it as a double feature because it is Hitchcock, after all, but I could see that as a bonus feature in the same way as His Girl Friday, which is coming out on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like them to do that in period. I think I've hoped for Monsieur Heyer and Panique. That would be excellent. So that has nothing to do with what's on Filmstruck now, although probably at least one of those. Oh, no, actually, Panique had a Rialto is touring a new restoration, I think. So maybe that'll happen. Another thing that the Criterion Channel does is they'll put out full movies, and there's actually quite a few on there. But I just I assembled some of the latest ones that they have up. They don't keep them up there forever, so... I think an example, Mulholland Drive, I think that one's been up there for about a month or two, but they have an expiration date. I believe it was the end of January. But these, you know, it's not just the movie, it's all the features, so the supplements. And they also have The Housemaid is a recent one, and Safe, Todd Haynes, is a recent one. And but it's not that these are the only ones. They also did this for Kid with the Bike and Bicycle Thieves. They put up all the supplements there, and I imagine they'll keep them up there. But I still like that they will highlight a release out of the collection. If anything, it's if nothing else, it's just another way to think of a spine number. You know, it's a digital spine number. You can watch it on your streaming device, and yeah, I guess kids, you don't have to buy the disc if you don't want to. Although I recommend the disc
if you like it, then. You know, go buy the disc. You know, it's almost like a nice promotional piece too.
Yeah, and I get the sense that a lot of these are going to be temporary on the service. You know, they had Black Stallion in full edition recently as well. Mm-hmm. I think that that's still up, but it may be gone already. And I think this is a way for them to license movies that they don't have the digital rights to. For a brief mm-hmm. period of time to give people a chance to try it out or just to give people a chance to see it who haven't seen it in other ways.
Well, they did Silence of the Lambs, right. Which is, and they kicked the service off with that. And I mentioned the New Year's with Noel and I, that one's out of print. I think that one's in Studio Canal Hell, isn't it?
I'm not sure.
I think it is.
Can't remember.
Well, another pretty big package they have, and speaking of Studio Canal Hell, they have Essential Art House, 60 years of Janus films, but if I remember, I think that set is 50 films, and I counted, and I might have miscounted, I'm dumb, but I think I counted 36 films, so it's not complete, but it's still neat that they put this list together in a, you know, kind of like a letterbox list. You can see what you've watched and rewatch it if not. I don't know, but also, is it worth getting the box? The box is still in print, but a lot of the discs are not.
I can't even imagine having that page when I was 15 and first getting into movies. The idea that you can just log on to a service and watch 36 of the best movies ever made right at your fingertips is it's staggering. And I think older film fans like us don't realize just how different the experience of being exposed to cinema will be for those kids that are getting into these movies now. And I think, you know, there's a lot to sort of complain about in that regard, to say, well, maybe they're not going to value these as highly. But I think the positives of it are just so much so outweigh the negatives, and the idea that you can do this is just really amazing.
Yes, kids, you can binge watch Bergman. Yeah. I don't recommend it, but I know it's happening. I see it on in the social media groups. But yeah, 10, 15, 20 years ago, to find this library, I mean, you would have to go, maybe if you're lucky, the library, and it, probably
yeah,
not even that.
Be the only option.
Or if you spend all, you know, all your money getting all these discs, but even that, there's so many amazing releases coming out, and now they're being made available on these streaming services. So yeah, it is, as you put it, staggering to see. And yeah, I've seen all these, but I do like that other people can discover them and for the first time, and that yeah, it is. I think. You know, there's always conversations about how cinema's dead, and yeah, new films are, I'm going to admit, are not as good as old films, but I think the kids, and even the filmmaking kids, they do have access to a bunch of gems that previously might not have been at their fingertips. So I think it's a positive. So, all right, well, that's Filmstruck. Do you guys like the service, or?
Love it.
We love it. We were talking with Matt briefly about the Venn diagram of our film knowledge, and my Criterion overlay with your, Erica's, Turner Classic Movies overlay, and how if we could build a service that was custom made for us, this turns out is it. This is exactly what we would have made.
If they invite user suggestion themes, mine would start with Regis Toomey highlights. So it's wonderful, and I'm really excited about a lot of the themes on the main channel. For example, classic Bollywood. For me, I go back to, I'm that 10-year-old kid looking for an entry point, and that's what they have provided with this amazing curatorial approach.
Yeah, they're knocking it out as far as the curation goes. And yeah, some people have expressed disappointment about the TCM angle. I think a lot of people were hoping that it would be, you know, TCM movie of the week, you know, the Thin Man series and et cetera, all these noirs, maybe Warner Archive classics. But I'm okay. There's such a vast library on Criterion, and there is a lot of overlap. And I think TCM, I don't know, but I think they just basically helped fund it, and they have their own gig that's going well
sure.
for now.
And it's early yet, too, so that stuff may creep in more and more as it goes.
Well, and I'm in that category of I got so excited. I was thinking that it would have a little bit more of a TCM representation, strictly from the standpoint of those B and C titles, mm-hmm. those programmers that you cannot get anywhere else and you don't even know where to start. So I really hope to see more of that.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
But a lot of them are coming out on disc. You know, really, the Val Lewton stuff, those are B pictures that are remembered well. But we got Cat People, and so hopefully we'll get more like it. But
yeah,
I'm curious where it goes, and who knows where cable TV's going. You know, people are cutting the cord, so TCM might find another home. All right, well, that's let's move on. One thing we're going to do weekly, and we can't do since it's the beginning of January, was we're going to talk about each release that comes out. And future guests, you don't have to watch them. I'm sure plenty of people will. I will. But a preview of this week, and Matt, you already mentioned it, His Girl Friday is coming out this week on Tuesday, and it's bundled with Lou Milestone's The Front Page, which is the basis. And, of course, His Girl Friday is the Hawks comedy classic, which is brilliant, in my opinion. So we'll talk about that next week. There's also, don't be confused, but there's a 400 Blows release, which, speaking of dual format, that's just another unbundling. It's nothing new.
Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, that one was just a plastic case. I haven't played the DVD and probably won't, so I think you're just losing like a millimeter in width there. So no big deal, but if you didn't want that millimeter of width, who does, right? Who wouldn't,
yeah,
right?
This is a funny film that it's... I mean, it's been in the Antoine Dwinnell, you know, that box set. It was released as a single. It was one of the early Blu-ray releases, you know, on just a, you know, non-dual format. Then it got a release as dual format. Now it's being broken apart. So it's mm-hmm. made the rounds.
It sure has. It's a great film. It should make the rounds. But I've seen great. People confused saying, oh, wow, 400 Blows is coming out. It's like, no, you dunce. It's been out for, you know, 10 years or so.
Right.
So, well, another thing I wanted to do is talk about what we've been doing. So, you know, we'll start out. Mark and I did the wish list episode that we've already mentioned on Criterion Cast, which was a lot of fun. Sort of the year end special, or one of them. The other one is the best of, which I'm not doing this year. But I did list my favorite Criterions on Letterboxd, and I ranked them. So, if you like, I like lists. If you couldn't tell. So if you want to look at that, I'll put it in the show notes. And then, Cole and Erica, I know you had your ants in your pants. Was
yeah.
that right?
Exactly. Bonus points to anyone who knows where
Sullivan's Travels.
There
hey.
You go.
Nice.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
There was no sex in your episode, though. What was that about?
That's in our hey. In the Hayloft
yeah.
midsummer episode.
Yeah, we just did our year-end wrap-up, which for us is always super fun, since we don't have to concentrate on one label or we're not restricted to things like shows that do only new releases. We can go back and focus on our favorite film discoveries for the last year, and it's always great because when we get together and start putting this list together, we realize we've seen a lot of great movies this year and every year. And so we ran down a list of our 10 favorites apiece, one that we shared. The Road Trilogy was one that was common to both of our lists. In fact, great. There's a lot of Criterion representation on each of our lists. I think we covered For All Mankind, the Before Trilogy. Did you have others on yours?
You mentioned The Vendors and also American Friends.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one, yeah.
So yeah, for Criterion fans, there's a lot of representation on our year-end list. And the next thing we have coming is we just finished recording our Meet John Doe episode as we launch into this new frontier in 2017. Not to get political or anything, but It's a very timely film, let's say.
Yeah, I have to be honest, I don't like Meet John Doe that much, but it is very relevant. So I think I have issues with some of Capra's style. Not that I'm not a Capra fan. I think was a tremendous filmmaker, but the kind of the populism that he would put into his films is a little much for me sometimes. But it's been a while. I haven't seen that one since film class, and I think I remember other people liked it.
It was a big gap in time for me as well, and we both had completely different reactions to it in this viewing than we had before.
Yeah, there was a lot in it that I found complicated and difficult and contradictory, and so it engendered a lot of interesting conversation. Actually, it wasn't as straightforward and America as I initially thought or half remembered.
I can see that, and also if you're going to throw criticisms at it, the ending, it was kind of a mess the way they had to come up with the ending. So, all right, well, Mark, dare I ask, what have you been doing lately?
Well, you mentioned the Wishlist episode, and we are on Criterion Close-Up. We're going to be talking about Punch Drunk Love for PTA. So I've been looking for an excuse to rewatch some PTA, Paul Thomas Anderson, that I haven't seen since it came out or have only seen once. So that's kind of my January marathon, as well as catching up with some new releases. Although I have an idea, which has been really... inspired by Cole and Erica, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to what I need to do each year is, once you guys make your year end list, I'm going to make the next year the year of Cinema Du Magic Lantern, because you've got some amazing stuff there that I haven't seen.
So. I thought you were going to have ants in your pants or have sex on the podcast or something.
Just be careful of Thundercrack.
Yeah.
That's the one I noted down first.
So, of course you did.
We did do the Grosset episode.
That's so true.
We did, yeah, and Cole was with us. Soldiered through. Matt, you got anything going on?
No, I'm... it's really just the Facebook group that I'm focused on now. I was tweeting each spine number in order, but I've been off of that recently. I think, again, with the politics, I think I just sunk into a deep depression and have been staying off Twitter. But I think... I'm going to pick it up again in 2017 and try to finish it off. I think I'm in the 300s, but that's at Criterion by Spines on Twitter. So we'll see how that goes. I think I got stuck on Ron, which I want to rewatch because it's been so long since I've seen it. I actually think that's on Filmstruck too.
Is it?
Yeah, not in the Criterion section though. So that's a Studio Canal title. So.
Yeah, we talked about that on the wish list a little bit. Yeah, Twitter doesn't have that same shiny gleam this year. So I haven't been on it as much either. A little bit here and there, but I think I'll get back in the swing of things. So, okay, well, the final one thing I want to do at the end of the shows, and we knew this one would be a little longer, and that's fine, but this is a little longer than most shows. But I wanted to throw out some news out there. So anything that's Criterion related, and we can, if anybody has something, we can go around again. The one thing I'll throw out there is Janus Films announced they're going to tour. I'm not going to say it. Maybe Cole can help me. But this Polish filmmaker's movie, The Lure, Agnieszka Smoczyńska's. Is that okay?
It's as close as I can
That's
get
what
right
I
now.
Would have said.
Okay. Okay. It's probably not that great, but no, this is a, I guess you'd call it a horror mermaid film. This is not Splash or Mermaids, but it looks very interesting. I'm curious. There's a trailer out, so we'll put links in that. So so I'm guessing that's a new release that's going to maybe come to Criterion, which, I guess since Jellyfish Eyes, that hasn't really happened that much. I can't think of maybe like Something in Love, like Someone in Love, the Kierostomy. But did you guys see the trailer? Do you have any thoughts on this looks?
Can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I'm keen on seeing it. It's unlike anything else that would be in the collection if it came to the collection, that's for sure.
It seems like we have a positive opportunity to probably see it through Austin Film Society, because we see a lot of the Janus.
Yeah, they bring all the Janus touring prints in. So. Our beloved Austin Film Society. Let's plug them.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's a musical. Yay, it wasn't clear from the trailer if people are actually singing the songs, if the characters are actually singing in the movie, but it, apparently there's quite a bit of music in it. It's got kind of like a new wave vibe to it, so I am very excited about this one. And yeah, I don't think that they have toured anything brand new since Jellyfish Eyes. I guess The Great Beauty was right around the same time, so they mostly do older stuff these days. But yeah, this seems like a good pickup.
Was The Great Beauty from beginning to end a Janis
it was.
Tour?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I guess you. Yeah. Well, okay. I guess I'll just go around. Yes. No. Do you, Cole, Erica, have anything you want to mention that's happening in the Criterion or film world?
Not Criterion specifically, but the only thing I can think of release wise that I'm excited, super excited about, is Evolution is coming out in March on Shout Factory.
Right.
And that was my favorite film that I saw in all of 2015, and I have just been waiting for physical media to come to a Region 1 release, although now we have the multi-region player. But it is such a beautiful and odd film that I highly recommend everyone checks it out.
It is streaming right now.
That's true.
We waited for that, so we at least got to see it that way.
Mm. Yeah, that's DVD only in the UK, too. I checked it out as part of the Vermont Film Festival, and that was one of the After Dark ones. And certainly, it's not going to tell you what it's after.
No.
You'll have to pick it up for yourself.
Interesting.
Good film.
Okay, I think you sold me. So, Mark, do you have anything?
Nothing really earth-shattering, just been catching up with some new films, and I'll just say, if anyone hasn't seen Moonlight yet, it's a must-see from 2016.
Yeah, we're getting into award season, so even though that's not the purview of this cast, I think we can't help but talk about this stuff, because we're into this stuff. So, all right, Matt, do you have anything?
Well, if you have kids, don't see Manchester by the Sea. It'll ruin your life.
Especially if you live in Boston. I haven't seen it, but
it's a very good movie, but it is very, very sad.
Very sad. I have one piece of news that Ludwig is coming out from I forget who's putting it out, but I think that's Arrow Academy, actually.
It's Arrow Academy, that's right.
And I think that's US only. That's the debut, or towards the beginning of their US service that could challenge Criterion. So that's Visconti. That's a long 4 or 5 hour film, I think, if I remember. So if you're into those long films, there you go. Visconti.
Sold.
4-disc limited edition. Have to check that out.
Yeah, I pre-ordered it just because I'm a glutton. All right. Well, that has been the first episode of Criterion Now. You want to just tell us, go around one more time, tell us where to find you? Cole? Erica?
Sure. You can find us at our website, magiclanternpodcast.com, or we're on Twitter @lantern_cast.
Best place for me is on Twitter @MarkHurney, H-U-R-N-E as I always spell it, and of course Criterion Close Up. We're going to more of a monthly format, so check us out at CriterionCU.
Matt?
I have been on a Letterboxd tear recently. So if anybody's interested in what I am watching, I've been watching about 30 or 40 movies a month in the last few months. So, it's been a lot of fun, and, I'm Matthew E.G. on Letterboxd, and, I mostly write, 3-sentence reviews. So there's not too much to, too much time taking up. And then I'd love for anybody listening to join the Criterion Considered Facebook group. And if you're a collector, the former parent group that we were split off from, Criterion Completion, is a really great place to talk the collecting side of Criterion and meet some really nice people who are into this sort of thing that we all dig.
Like all of us.
But don't come on Considered and recommend Kill Bill, because I've had to delete that post about 18 times.
No Tarantino. It's never on Criterion, probably. All right. Well, I'm Aaron. As I mentioned, I'm still on Twitter, AWES505. The show is on Twitter, Criterion_now. Not a whole lot of followers yet, but you'll recognize the logo. Please, there is a Criterion Now without the underscore, so remember the underscore. And we're on Criterion Cast, so you can check the master feed or subscribe on this feed itself. And this has been a fun first episode, so thanks for joining me, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
It's been a blast.